Apple cider vinegar, man. You lose an arm. Just throw some of that shit on there. It'll grow back.
I'll tell you, your arm will grow back.
You got like a little, you got like little fingers. Like, oh, it's working.
It's working. Just give it time. It takes time, but it works. Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. I'm Steve Vinson.
And I'm Paul Schultz.
And nothing you're about to hear is true.
Finally.
Finally.
We do this for you, Paul Wolfsdorf. We do this for you, Michael Vinson. We do this for you, Superfan James and Andy and Dee and Uncle Carl and all the people who listen, that like Aiden and the people, you know, the problem with naming names is you'll always forget somebody. Mm-hmm. You always leave somebody out.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it doesn't mean we like them
more.
More. Right. We don't like them less. Clearly, we don't like them more. But anyway, we do this for ourselves.
Yes.
As well. And so today, we got a little softcore history for you. This was kind of personal. And then Paul has reached a milestone in his fatherhood that we have absolutely got to discuss. He has graduated one.
Yes. Got one out the door, so to speak.
Got one matriculated.
Whoa.
One out of four ain't bad. I mean, so now you could fail on the rest of them. And you could still say, you know what? 25% success rate, you know. A batter, you know, in baseball, Major League Baseball, if you have a 250 batting average, that's that's like three out of every four times you get up to bat, you don't do shit, right? So 250 is not bad. In baseball, that's considered good. So, you know, you could probably just kind of rest on your laurels at this point.
That just goes to show how action-packed baseball really is.
How is parenting like baseball?
It goes on forever.
It's like moments of excitement punctuated by long periods of boredom. Will this ever end? Man, it's been a couple weeks since we recorded. Aside from the graduation, how has your couple of weeks been? I say aside from the graduation because we'll get to that.
No, they've been pretty busy. I've been, aside from working on Life Science Effect, I've been keeping busy at my parents' house, helping them out. And we've just been, you know, school's out now. It's been out for about 2 weeks. So it's been nonstop, just insanity here. You know, just when I think I get rid of one, another one shows up. And, you know, all I'm trying to do is have like a naked Thursday. And it's just not panning out.
What's an example of something that went that was insane?
Aiden has been over here a lot. He's been bouncing between his house, his mom's house, and here. His buddies come over. We've been playing a lot of Dungeons and Dragons. Been watching a lot of movies.
What movie?
One of the things we've been doing is we've been marathoning the Marvel movies. So that takes 136 hours. So. We've been
spread, that kills some time.
Yeah, we've been spreading that out, but it's really been just a lot of working. I've been, you know, my the weather finally turned, so my 80-year-old parents can now get their garden in, but you know they're 80 and can't do it themselves. So we've been helping out over there, and I've been spending a lot of time sitting on my laptop, not looking at porn. Doing research for both shows and getting stuff lined up to, you know, for our trying to make Don't Panic, you know, better than it has been doing some research for writing and some writing for the Halloween show coming up. Just a lot of stuff.
Well, that's exciting.
It really is. It doesn't sound like it, but it is. Like I said, you know, we've been spending a lot of time at my parents' house, and my dad is hilarious. You know, he's one of the last holdouts on having a like home computer. You know, the big tower. You know, the gigantic keys that I never noticed just how low keys are on a laptop until I started using this computer the other day, and it's like a little typewriter, like ka-chunk, 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 trying to type stuff in for him. But he's so funny because he gets up in the morning and check, you know, he's 80, so he hangs out on Yahoo a lot. And he's so funny because when something comes across, you know, he gets up and he checks his morning, you know, his morning routine is he gets up and he looks for articles that he can be mad about. And he makes this sound every time, and every time he makes it, I'm like, oh, this is going to turn into one of those things. I'm just trying to have my coffee and eat my donut. But he makes this sound every time he disagrees with an article. He goes like, every time. And then he has to read it. And it's like, and it's usually something about, like, you know, something Bill Maher said, you know, or something about Hillary, you know. It's always who I still don't know why that's a thing, but it is. But we had a subject to clickbait. I'm like, Dad, that stuff is clickbait. Have you ever noticed that you can have 10 articles with different titles, but you click on it and it's the same damn article? He's like, yeah, I've been noticing that. And then he rattles off, we were talking about clickbait. Clickbait uses sensational titles, you know. It's not, you know, war's over. It's, and you won't believe what this is, or this is outrageous. And he goes, well, here's one right here. It's, and it was like, Jennifer Lopez's bikini is too sexy to be believed, or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, exactly that. And I'm talking to my mom at the table, and I look over, and there's my dad. He's got his nose to the computer. He's reading the article about Jennifer Lopez's too sexy bikini.
Yeah, of course, like, he is.
And I said, and yet he reads it. And my mom looks at me.
There better be pictures.
Well, my mom looks at me, she goes, that's your father's porn. I'm like, ah!
She's like, well, Paul, you have your porn, which, you know, I know what your porn is. And then your father has his porn. And you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Back it up.
back it up and bleach my ears out. I don't even want to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the same thing happens every morning over there. Like, really? Here we go. It's like, hold on to your butts. I'm suddenly Samuel Jackson in Jurassic Park. It's like,
so Jurassic World is coming out now with that guy from Parks and Recreation, with Aubrey Plaza's boyfriend from Parks and Recreation. And best I can tell, it's pretty much Jurassic Park.
That's what, like, I've been told. I haven't watched it yet.
They put dinosaurs on an island, and then something goes wrong, and now they got to survive dinosaurs.
It's like every episode of Fantasy Island. Everything seems perfect.
The dinosaurs are loose.
Both. We got to get the dinosaurs back into the cages. It's a T-Rex. No tattoo.
It's not a T-Rex. It's a Velociraptor.
It's basically a T-Rex that's a midget. It's like a midget T-Rex.
Tattoo, we don't say midget.
I think I can say it whatever I want to say, boss.
It's the M word. Yeah, midget,
right.
Can say it, but us tall
I
people
can
say can't
midget,
say it.
Boss, but you can't say midget. The plane.
So that's very exciting. You lead an exciting life.
I certainly do.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Also, in the last week, my family and I went to Washington, D.C. For a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the funeral and then we toured Washington, D.C. So we got to see. It's funny. It's hard to impress my daughters, right? Mm-hmm. We went to the Rocky Mountains, and for months, my daughter was like, we were talking about how awesome the Rocky Mountains are and how big they are and everything. This was for a wedding a few years ago. We get there and she's like, I thought they'd be bigger. Okay. So, you know, we go to Washington, D.C. We go to the National Holocaust Museum. Mm. You know, somber. Kids, you know, gotta prepare you for what you're going to see. This is history, and it's important for you to know that these things happened and to understand these people's story, you know. Mm-hmm. So we go through it. We get done. We walk out. Like, so kids, any thoughts, anything you want to talk about, anything you want to discuss? Yeah, I pretty much already knew all that. I did. Okay. On to the next thing. Like, we walk over to the White House, and I had been talking about how fun it would be to see the White House. She's like, I hope we see Donald Trump. I wonder if he'll be out, like, playing on the lawn with his kids. Like, yeah, he's going to be playing Frisbee with Barron.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, that'll be cool. So we're walking to the White House. She's like, oh, man, I hope he's out there on the lawn. I was like, you do know we were kidding about that, right? She's like, what? You don't think he'll be out in the lawn? I was like, Trump probably doesn't even know what a Frisbee looks like. Okay.
That's right.
And he probably does, you know, the lawn. He's going to be out playing Frisbee on the lawn. You really?
With those hands?
We get to the White House, and, you know, you have to kind of stand across the street. They don't let you stand on the fence anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like police are in the way and stuff. She's like, I don't know. Versailles bigger. I thought it would be bigger. So we're like, okay, we're going to the Lincoln Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, whatever they call it thing, mm-hmm. right? The thing that's on the penny, right? And we get there, and I was pleasantly blown away when she goes, oh my God, I had no idea this was so big. It's like,
yes!
Score, finally. It's like, I know, right? How do they fit this big thing on the back of a penny?
Lincoln 1, Holocaust Museum 0.
That's right. That's right. So that was fun. Oh, this is actually out of the blue, completely unrelated to anything we've discussed so far. But I went my entire life, well, most of my entire life, only ever having heard of one person who had shingles.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my grandmother, who was like 72 at the time, right?
Yeah, that's an old
thing. And I heard she
thing.
Had shingles. And I was like, well, what's shingles? And my mom's describing it. And I was like, that sounds like leprosy. She's like, no, it's not the same thing. It's still a serious disease, but, you know, she'll be okay. But, you know, she's going to have this rash and, you know, sores on her body. And that was the only time I had ever heard about shingles. So in my mind, it was an old person disease. Mm-hmm. It was around the same time that my dad was telling us about this dish they used to have in the Army where they would put hamburger gravy on toast, and they called it shit on a shingle.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So I associated shingles with this like awful diarrhea looking food, right?
Awful looking, but delicious. I mean, it's meat, gravy, and bread, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, what could go wrong? So fast forward to about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting this new project, and there's this 30 something year old guy, and he's like walking around, like, you know, kind of slow and everything. I was like, hey, what's wrong? He's like, well, just getting over a case of shingles. I was like, what? Yeah. I was like, you got to explain this to me. I don't know what it is. This is the second time in my life I heard about it. I thought it was an old person disease. So, you know, he explains to me, it's like, it's chicken pox that re-manifests itself. I was like, mm-hmm. Well, that ain't right.
Mm-mm.
Then a year later, somebody else I know gets shingles, and then another one. And the next thing you know, it's all shingles all the time. I go my whole life never hearing about shingles. It's only an old person disease, similar to leprosy. And the next thing you know, everybody I know is getting shingles.
Steve?
The hell?
Steve, you're getting old.
You know what I think it is?
What's that?
I'll tell you what I think it is. And I've said this many times. I think there's an Osama bin Laden-like character over in a cave in Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
who planned this elaborate bio bioweapon attack, right? And it's a disease that's similar to shingles, but due to international copyrights, it's not. And like they spread it, like these crop dusters went all over the U.S. and they spread this virus that gives you this rash and a fever and all these things that look like shingles, but it's not. And so now we're all getting sick with this thing, right? Successful bioterrorism attack. And he's sitting in his cave waiting to see on the news, like, weird dude in cave, you know, and so he now becomes the most important person on Earth, right? Although he's like nothing, like there's nothing. And he's like, what the hell? I perpetrated the perfect terrorist attack and they think it's shingles. Which I don't know what the word is for shingles over there in the caves of Afghanistan. They probably have their own word for it.
Or it's just the Democrats. Did I ever tell you my Rocky Mountain story?
No.
Years ago, when I was up in the mountains, you know, we pulled in, we were going out to Las Vegas. This was back in the 90s. If you remember back that far?
Oh, when you were wearing flip-flops.
Yes, when I was wearing flip-flops. Because that's what I did in the 90s. No, it was so funny because we pulled into this gas station. And, you know, the parking lot's on an angle of about, like, what is that, 45 degrees probably? And the and the store, the mini mart was built into the mountain. And here I am trudging up this hill. And I swing the door open and I step in and I immediately fall forward because my momentum is trying to. And I look drunk when I come stumbling in. I look like, you know, Rob Petrie when he trips over the couch, you know. And I mean, it was just such a, the landscape, you've been there, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And there's a girl working behind the counter, and I told her, I said, you got to feel pretty blessed to live here. And she's like, why? Just like, can I just pay for my, you know, my Snapple? Get in the car. How do you not know why? I mean, for crying out loud, you know, it was just so pretty. But
yeah, and I think there's a fundamental truth in that story, which is no matter where you go and no matter how awesome you think it is, there's some bored teenager or 20 something person who just wants to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
It's it's like the hottest chick you ever see walking down the street. Mm-hmm. Somebody, some dude somewhere is tired of her shit.
That's right.
Hey, how about we do a little softcore history?
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere you turn these days, people are digging in. Everyone, it seems, has taken a side, and many people believe the other side is not just wrong, but dangerous. Imagine for a moment, I want our listeners to imagine that things get even worse. What if things just spiral down and your worst fears become your reality? The unstoppable tide of history threatens everything you've worked for, and everyone you love is in danger of being swallowed up in the nightmare. And you have a choice. You have been called to choose a side. Sitting this one out is no longer an option. You must fight. Fighting for one side will mean the potential loss of everything, and fighting for the other side will mean the potential loss of your sacred honor. Who will you fight for? Believe it or not, you're not the first to face this impossible choice. Colonel George Washington was battle-tested and heroic before he was famous. He led men in battle for a nation that he would eventually betray. He would accept a commission as general in a traitorous rebellion and resign his commission as colonel in the army to which he had sworn his allegiance. If he were to be successful, the result would be a successful revolution and the establishment of a new nation. Failure would mean ruin for him and for the cause he deemed worthy of betrayal and treason, and the death of an infant nation. George Washington was born and raised in colonial Virginia, a loyal subject of Great Britain. He was devoted to the cause of British settlement in North America, and he dedicated himself to military service, rising to the rank of colonel in the Continental Army. He led men heroically against the French in the French and Indian War. He was well respected by his loyal soldiers and destined for further success in the Royal Militia. When war broke out between Great Britain and his beloved Virginia and her allies, Colonel Washington had to make an agonizing decision. Honor his oath to the army he had served, or serve alongside his fellow countrymen to establish a new nation, independent of the distant power they saw as tyrannical and oblivious to their concerns. When offered a generalship and command of a large army, Washington chose to fight for his home against the distant power. He committed this act of treason with no small amount of trepidation and with full knowledge of the consequences of failure. Well, as we all know, things worked out well for General Washington. He won the war. He helped establish a new nation, and history calls him our father. He had no idea that this would be the outcome. In fact, if the war between the fledgling American colonies and the most powerful land and sea force on the planet had been a boxing match in Vegas, the odds would not even have been close. So why would Washington choose the underdog over the heavy odds-on favorite? Idealism? The literature doesn't support that idea. He was no Adams or Jefferson or Madison, not a philosopher or a liberty warrior, just a warrior. A warrior who felt the bonds and brotherhood of his fellow Virginians and his fellow Americans. Did he fight for God and country? Maybe. But I believe he fought more for the bond of brotherhood than for any ideal of freedom and liberty. Another man faced the same impossible choice less than 9 decades later. Robert E. Lee was born 8 years after George Washington died. He was born and raised in Virginia. He became a loyal patriot dedicated to the ideals of the United States of America. Like his father, Lee was a military guy. He served in the United States Army with distinction. He was loved by the men he led and established himself as an exceptional commander in the war against Mexico. He rose to the rank of colonel and was undoubtedly destined for greatness in the U.S. Army. When war broke out between the United States and his beloved Virginia and her allies, Colonel Lee had to make an agonizing decision. Honor his oath to the army he had served and support the cause of the United States, in which he was indelibly invested, or take up arms alongside his fellow Virginia countrymen who were bent on establishing a new nation, independent of the Northern power they saw as tyrannical and oblivious to their concerns. When offered a generalship and command of a large army, Lee chose to fight for his home against the Northern power. He committed this act of treason with no small amount of trepidation and with full knowledge of the consequences of failure. As we all know, things did not work out so well for General Lee. He lost the war. The nation for which he committed the ultimate act of treason was crushed, and General Lee became a symbol for a failed cause. Had he known that the Confederate States of America would fail, and had he known that his name, General Lee, would be the most well-known symbol of the fight to maintain chattel slavery, would he have made the same decision to betray the USA? Robert Lee was not a pro-slavery crusader or a defender of the antebellum status quo. He was a soldier. Did he fight for God and country? Maybe. But I believe he fought more for the bond of brotherhood than for any ideal of states' rights or antebellum aristocracy. So if you think these metaphorical and symbolic connections between these two Virginian army heroes turned traitors already seems uncanny, wait until you hear the rest of their story. As a young farmer in Virginia, George Washington married the widow, Martha Dandridge Custis. Together, George and Martha raised Martha's children from her previous marriage. When Martha's son Jackie Custis died during the Revolutionary War, George adopted Jackie's son, George Washington Park Custis, as his own. The young Custis inherited a large estate and a fortune from his famous parents, George and Martha. He used his fortune to build a mansion on a hill overlooking the Potomac River and what would eventually become Washington, D.C., as a shrine to his hero and his adopted father, George Washington. Custis's daughter, George and Martha's granddaughter, Mary Custis, inherited the house, known as Arlington House by this time. She married and lived at Arlington House for 30 years with her husband, Robert Edward Lee. Yes, that Robert E. Lee. It was in Arlington House on a fateful day in April of 1861 that Colonel Lee contemplated his grim decision whether to betray the United States. It was here that he decided to fight alongside his fellow Virginians, the homeland of his wife's grandfather, George Washington. It was this house he left when he traveled to Richmond to take command of the Army of Northern Virginia as a general in the Confederate States of America. Once he left as a traitor, Martha knew the Union troops would come and occupy the high ground above the Union capital city, so she left. And shortly after she left, the house and the land were confiscated. Arlington House was used as a field hospital, and the grounds around the house were used to bury the war dead. In time, this war, like every other war, ended. The land around Arlington House was dedicated as a national cemetery to honor and inter the dead who had given the last full measure for their country and for the bond of brotherhood. Now, when you go to a funeral at Arlington National Cemetery, you drive up the main gate. Instead of turning left to enter the parking lot for the visitor center, you drive straight up to the armed guard. You roll your window down and you tell him you're there for a service. He asks for the name of the deceased and checks your ID, and then you drive to another checkpoint just in front of the majestic entrance. Another check of your ID and an inquiry as to the name of the deceased. The second guy delivers very specific instructions on where to drive and where to park. You drive through some historical hallowed grounds. A couple of more armed security guards direct you to where to park and where to go after you park. Then you walk to the holding room, and it's a lot like the holding rooms at regular funeral parlors that you've been to. Crying friends and family hugging each other, a unique quiet reserved for places like this. Beautiful views of manicured landscape, overstuffed chairs and sofas and attractive plants. That guy who always tries to navigate that fine line of keeping a sad mood going while also trying to say something appropriately funny. He thinks it somehow makes people feel better and reminds them that the deceased liked to laugh and would enjoy a good joke at his own funeral. A low-talking representative from the cemetery serves the funeral director role. He expresses his condolences and explains what to expect in a low, solemn, rehearsed tone. He refers to your loved one as the deceased, or your father, or your loved one, or your friend, depending on the circumstances and the intended audience. When the time comes, assuming your loved one was cremated, the closest relative of the deceased will be instructed to carry your father, or have someone of your choosing carry your father, to the lead car for transport to the final resting place. The rest of you will receive specific instructions to fall behind the car transporting your loved one or friend in a specific order by family rank. The procession will wind its way through the historic hallowed grounds until it reaches the spot where the funeral service will take place. If you're lucky, the skies will be overcast and there will be a light drizzle to help set the mood. You will walk to a pavilion and your friend will be placed on a pedestal in front of some chairs. Across from the pavilion, on the other side of the road, will be a squad of 7 riflemen and 1 commander. In the pavilion would be 6 honor guard and a commander. The honor guard will unfold a U.S. flag in a very specific fashion. Slowly, deliberately, with honor. They'll hold the flag over the deceased while a military chaplain says some words and reads a poem. The rifle team will fire 3 times each into the air over the pavilion. A bugler will play taps. The honor guard will fold the flag as deliberately as they unfolded it. The commander will ceremonially take the flag from the honor guard, walk slowly to the closest relative of your friend. She will kneel, hand the flag to the family member, and say, "On behalf of the President of the United States, the United States Air Force, and a grateful nation, please accept this flag as a symbol of our appreciation for your loved one's honorable and faithful service. Somebody from the cemetery, a woman who's part of a traditional association there, will kneel in front of the loved one and say something you won't be able to understand. Then you'll walk behind the honor guard and the family as you all make your way to the site of your friend's final resting place. There'll be a small open box among many other open boxes built into a wall. You and the others will gather around the spot. The chaplain will say a few words, and the funeral director will instruct the closest relative to put your father into the box or have someone of your choosing do it. Uncle Scott will put the cube-shaped urn containing Mark's remains into the open box in the wall. Friends go to the cars while family stays behind to do some more crying. I assume they put a marble cover over the box in the wall like all the others. I wonder what's written on the marble cover. I've already started trying to think up an excuse to travel to D.C. on a regular, maybe every few years, a regular basis to visit that peaceful spot. The phrase living history never really had a specific meaning for me. I guess I vaguely felt like it was something or someone who had made history and was still making history, but I now have a fairly specific mental picture of living history. The last time I visited Arlington National Cemetery, it was as a tourist. I walked around and looked up the famous grave sites, toured the Custis House. As I wandered the hallowed grounds, the historic final resting place of so many military dead, a funeral procession passed me. I'd had one of those, oh yeah, they still have funerals here moments. You know what I mean? Anyway, fast forward however many years, and I'm driving a car through these grounds, not as a tourist, but as a mourner. As a player on the stage of tradition. Only that's not how it felt. It felt just like the punch in the gut that every funeral I've ever been to felt like. Questions that I already know the answer to. Could I have done anything to prevent this death? Could I have been a better friend? Would it have made a difference? Of course, the answer to these questions is yes. I could have been a better friend. I could have done more to prevent his death. I could have made more of a difference. But there's no scenario, no amount of anything I could have done that would have caused me to not have these questions at his funeral. Here's a question, and I may be uniquely positioned to know the answer. Why did my friend Mark, an anti-war, anti-violence liberal Democrat with peaceful tendencies bordering on conscientious objection, why did he want to be buried at a national cemetery with full military honors? Mark didn't fight for God and country. As far as I know, he never fired a shot in anger. He never saw actual combat. But he had to make an impossible choice. He chose to fight. He fought to protect the soldiers in his charge from the dangers of incompetent leadership. He fought to bring justice to an unapologetic child porn addict. He fought to build bonds with his war buddies and his post-war military brothers. I believe Mark found meaning in the meaninglessness of this world. He found a bond with the only other people on this planet who could relate to his horrifying nightmares. You know, they say warriors fight mostly for the other warriors fighting next to them. I think that's who Mark kept fighting for, long after he stopped fighting for himself. It was the tattoo that told me all this. The tattoo and his explanation to me that he worked hard to protect his men from an evil and incompetent commander. But really, you know, the tattoo told me all I needed to know. It was on his back, and the only tattoo that he ever got. And it said, quote, "From this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers."
Ready? Aim! Fire! Ready? Aim! Fire! Ready? Aim! Fire! Lock! Rifle! Half left.
What is democracy?
Well, I was never very clear on it myself. Like every other kind of government, it's got something to do with young men killing each other, I believe.
When it comes my turn, will you want me to go?
For democracy, any man would give his only begotten son.
This is E&M of Underground Columbus, and I'm here to speak briefly about veteran suicides. In 2012, the Veterans Affairs released a suicide data report, which revealed that 22 veterans commit suicide daily. This staggering number is the result of service members returning from the battlefield with physical and mental wounds. Many vets have difficulty transitioning to normal life and getting the help they need. Suicide prevention is a tough assignment to tackle, but with education, you'll be able to help a loved one identify the triggers that can lead them to thoughts of suicide. There are plenty of resources to help end veteran suicides. Call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. The war on veteran suicide starts at home.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message. I love you. Now, back to our show.
Robert E. Lee married George Washington's granddaughter.
Yeah.
And this house that he lived in, that he left, became Arlington National Cemetery. How come I didn't know that? It makes me mad at our history teachers.
You know why you didn't know that? In February around here, kindergartners celebrate 100 Day. 100 Day is the 100th day that they are in school. In February, okay? School starts in late August, early September. But there's so many between weekends, holidays, and then they would, of course, have snow delays and all that. There's not enough time because public education sucks so hard that they can't cover. We all knew about Arlington. We've all seen pictures. We've all seen the picture of, like, the little girl kissing the, you know, the wall with all the names on it. We've seen all that shit. But I honestly, what you just told me about all that, I had very little. I could barely keep up. I knew a little bit.
Yeah.
But all of that is so, once this goes back to where we only learn dates, there's.
Well, that's it. Whether it was 100 days or 50 days in school, if you're spending most of your day like getting the kids to memorize dates, of course you don't have time to tell them stories like both of these guys were, they could have gone either way. George Washington could have fought for England.
Yeah.
Against the colonies.
And for all we know, we'd be speaking English by now if that would have happened.
Yeah. 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 Maybe Virginia wouldn't be a backwards southern hillbilly state.
Yeah, well, how did that happen?
It's like, what happened to Virginia?
They were like, they were on top of, oh, slaves.
Yeah.
That's what happened to Virginia.
Well, how about this? West Virginia, like, broke off from Virginia
because like,
they didn't want to be
state. They're like, we're sick of Virginia shit.
Yeah. We don't want slaves. We're anti-slavery, so we're going to break off from Virginia. It was probably more like, we don't want to be like we don't want to be killed in this war that's coming up.
Well,
but now it's the backwardest like hillbilly state in the country.
It's the biggest Mountain Dew chugginest, you know, reefer smokingest state in the Union.
Glad we can laugh.
I know.
Glad we can laugh about this now.
We've talked about this in the past about how we would be fast-tracked through world history to get to American history. Mm-hmm. And we still didn't learn this shit.
Right. Well, you know, there's this, Daniela Bellelli is this podcaster I listen to. And he does history podcasts. He's a history professor. And he complains that when he was a kid, Rome was pounded into him, right? Like the Roman history. Right. But it was all dates and names and whatever. And he didn't really like have a full grasp of how awesome and rich the history of Rome is.
Right.
Until like he was in college. And he said it. He said, I imagine it's probably the same for you guys when it comes to like the founding fathers and shit like that. You didn't realize the richness of the stories because you're just getting dates pounded into your head. Hey, you know, you were mentioning earlier about school and. How much time you've been spending with your oldest? Didn't he graduate recently from, from like high school?
Yeah, that was something else. It kind of crept up on me because I had to pull myself together for this one because this was something else.
Do you want a Kleenex?
No, I got this.
It's okay. Men can cry. It's okay.
I know. You know what's going to happen. You just know this shit's going to happen. But then when it does, you're like, it's surreal. And that word surreal was used so much during the ceremony by various speakers that it was like surreal.
Oh, really?
But it's, yeah, I don't know why everybody thinks graduating was surreal. It's like, oh, I didn't think I was going to get here. But it really is. It didn't strike me until we were all in the parking lot. And it was like, holy shit, you know, because he puts his gown on and he looks like a judge. for our listeners that didn't go to Rogers, LaPorte High School has awesome black robes. We had shitty sky blue, like the color blue that, you know, like your uncle got married in, you know, that horrible powder blue color.
Hey, all robes matter.
But anyway, where to begin? The ceremony was outdoor. Now LaPorte only has one high school. All the kids go to that high school. The graduating class is about 400 kids. It's huge. Now, I don't know what it is. There's something cool. As much as I'm anti-small town in a weird way, there's something cool happens in a small town when, like, they have a home game, for instance. They lose their shit. I mean, there's no parking anywhere. You know, our colors are orange and black. Orange and black, I swear it's fucking Halloween. Orange and black is everywhere. And
the mascot's the meat slicers, right?
Well, they're just the slicers now, yes. And as any slicer will tell you, once a slicer, always a slicer.
Mm-hmm. SFJ would tell you that. He's a slicer.
Yes, he is.
He does for a living. He used to do that for a living.
Yes. Anyway, so there's 400 kids in the audience, which means, or to graduating, which means there's about 5,000 people in the audience, and it's the middle of the day. The sky was beautiful, but we all got sunburned because the damn thing takes about 3 hours. It was so cool. I mean, the band was there. They had standing room only. Do you know who Blair Milo is? Blair Milo was the mayor of LaPorte. She's the one that came up with the whole...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Her administration came up with the whole Hub of Awesome, which is apparently our motto. I didn't vote. They didn't give me a ballot.
Awesome has to emanate from somewhere.
They didn't give me a ballot. Well, anyway, she left midterm on her second term as mayor to take up a position down in Indianapolis, as she's got some weird ass made up title she's some kind of secretary for talent or some shit like that. Well, she was the guest MC up here, and because she's a LaPorte graduate, and she was in the military, and everything they talked about was military, 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 military. They announced all the kids' names who were going into whatever service branch of the service they were going into, past, present, future. Everything was military, 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 military. And my oldest daughter was with me, and she leans over and she goes, "So apparently, if you don't go into the military, you ain't shit.
You suck."
I'm like, "Honey, welcome to the Midwest."
By the way, Blair Milo is the Secretary of Career Connections and Talent at the state of Indiana.
Now explain what the hell that even is. Yeah.
I don't know, because LinkedIn is not telling me it's...
Yeah, it's pretty vague. Well, she left.
Yeah.
She left midterm on her second term as mayor to take up that position, which left a lot of people a bad taste in people's mouths and stuff. But she, to her credit, I'm not a fan. I'll just throw it out there. I'm not a fan of her. But
how do you like Mark Krentz, the current mayor?
I don't. Is he there? He hasn't been around long enough for me to form an opinion yet. Okay. But she did tell the audience this really cool story, because like I said, military. She went into the service. I don't remember what exactly it was she did, but she told a story about she was over in Iraq.
She was the special assistant to the director, Surface Warfare Directorate in the U.S. Navy.
Oh yeah, okay. She was Navy. All right.
I probably should stop interrupting you.
No, you're cool. I'm not as rehearsed as you are. Yours was very well done. Mine's just kind of from the hip.
I just sat down and it took like 8 or 10 hours to gather my thoughts. That's all.
Well, as I when you sent me that, and when I was talking to Paul Volstorff, I'm like, my secret plan is to just get him to write more. So I let him do whatever, as much as he wants. Anyway, so Blair Milo tells this actually it's a really cool story. She was in Iraq and she was talking to another military fella, and they got on the subject of where she was from, and she'd mentioned that she was from LaPorte. And he's like, "Wait a minute, they have a big parade there, don't they?" Now, yes, LaPorte. Back in the day, like in the, you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s, we had the best parade. We were the parade shit when it came to Indiana.
We used to go to that parade when I was a kid instead of the Michigan City Parade.
Yes. In fact, the Lone Ranger used to be the Grand Marshal of that parade. That's another story. I have a Lone Ranger story, but I'm getting off track. So anyway... She's like, yeah, you know, it's the biggest parade in Indiana and blah, blah, blah. And he was an Air Force pilot. And he said that he had done a flyover over this 4th of July parade. And then he doubles back. He lands at Grisham Air Force Base. And then they hurried up, brought him to the parade, and... he got to be, you know, in the parade as well.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, I'll never forget it. I was in this red convertible. She's like, I drove that convertible. So it was, you know, it's one of these small world after all kind of stories.
Yeah.
But it was so cool. I mean, you know, I'm not a big military person, but I just was like, that's really cool that, you know, something like that could even happen in a world as big as ours, but then it's also very small.
There's a lot to admire about the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stories like hers. I mean, and she, Blair Milo, got a ton of great experience in the military. And, mm-hmm. you know, she was probably put in charge of more people and more assets and bigger budgets.
Mm-hmm.
Than she ever was put in charge of as the mayor of the city of LaPorte, right? Because the military just does that. They go, here, mm-hmm. take over this gigantic, battalion mm-hmm. as a 24-year-old, you know, college graduate or whatever.
Right.
So, and it's a neat story.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it really is. I mean... that kind of stuff doesn't happen every day.
Was she driving the convertible as the mayor, or why was she?
She was just driving it. She wasn't the mayor at the time. This was several years back.
You ever wonder if I had stayed in Michigan City instead of leaving? You ever wonder if I could have been elected mayor?
No, because you'd have been a libertarian. That shit ain't gonna fly in Indiana.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Although if I'd stayed in Michigan City, maybe I would have been a Democrat.
No.
No.
No. I think I'm the
Blair
only one.
Milo.
I'm the only one like within like 10 miles of here. getting back to the graduation, though.
All right.
There's Aiden. He goes up. You know the score. Everybody knows how it works. They call out the name. You get your diploma. It's blank.
Did you bring your air horn so that when he went across, you could blow the air horn and go, yeah, hey, that's my baby.
No, but we did. We did hoot it up. But the funny part was they mispronounced his last name.
Oh.
His own teacher that he just saw 2 days prior to that mispronounced his name. The woman that has known him for a year mispronounces his name. And we were joking and laughing about it afterwards. I'm just like, it got me thinking about like a couple of years ago when I met John Russo, who was the man that wrote the script for Night of the Living Dead. Oh, and right. Then he wrote the novelization. Yeah. Well, it happens to be one of my daughter's favorite movies of all time. So I got a poster. I got the classic Night of the Living Dead poster, and he signed it. And he goes, well, who do you want me to sign it to? And I told him, I said, can you sign it to Arlo? And I said, but it's spelled A-R-L-A-U-X. He said, oh, that's cool. So yeah, he writes, ghoulishly yours, Arlo. You know, John Russo. I said, yeah, you would be surprised how many people mispronounce her name. And he's like, well, A-U-X is O. He goes, the problem is nobody fucking reads.
Yeah.
And then again, there's my stepson goes up there and they completely mispronounce his name. And I'm thinking, it's not that hard to pronounce, you know?
How did they pronounce it?
Okay, his last name is Canola. They pronounced it Neola.
Right. So I have a friend named, last name Kanotek, K-N-O-T-E-K.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for the first 10 years I knew him, it was Notek. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly he wanted to be Kanotek, because I don't know, one of these like back to your roots things or something. So I can forgive if the person didn't know him already.
Like, yeah,
the fact that she knew him and should have already known that it was Canola.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if it was somebody just like a cold read, although I thought the people responsible for reading these names always went through them, and anything that was like questionable, they always checked, you know? I mean, you have one job.
Well, it got me thinking. I'm like, how the fuck are many other names are they mispronouncing? Like, this guy calls himself Smythe, but they pronounce it Smith, you know? How many other names are they mispronouncing?
Right?
But then, you know, okay, so the ceremony's over. It was very moving. It was, you know, finally it was over, and like any true nerd, the very next day, him and his buddies gathered at my house for some D&D.
Nice. Congratulations to you and to Aiden.
I don't know. It's weird. I was talking to one of his aunts, and I'm like, you know, they say that, like, the time goes by so fast. You know, I mean, you remember the diapers and the feedings and the burpings and the, you know, all the scrapes and all the cuts and all the crying and all the... And it seems like it's supposed to go by so fast, but it seems like it's taken 50 years to get here. It's crazy. But then she goes, give it a couple years. She goes, it'll seem like the blink of an eye. So apparently time really is relative.
Yeah, it's true. And it doesn't matter how hard you try to hold on to it. It just doesn't matter. It goes... Oh.
I don't even try to hold on anymore. Almost all of my kids are in their teens now. It's like a rocket sled. And I'm just like, I'm just watching it fly.
Well, on that happy note, I just want to remind our listeners to hug your kids, because you never know. When
that rocket sled,
when something unexpected could happen, like, for example, they could graduate from high school, something you never could have seen coming.
In some cases, this is LaPorte.
What's he going to do next, man?
Well, he's got a job. He's going to go probably to Ivy Tech to, because he wants to work. He wants to do code. Apparently, mm-hmm. that's the thing now that a lot of kids do. And I asked all of them. I felt it was great because I asked them all. I'm like, so what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? And they're all like, I'm like, that's okay. You don't have to know. Nobody right. knows, you know. Said if you and okay, none of them are going to college, but I said mm-hmm. here's the thing, they're all going to like Ivy Tech and various trade schools and whatnot. I said here's perfect. The thing about that, you know, you've been programmed since you were 14 years old. This is what you're gonna do when you're 30.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to change your mind a dozen times in the first few years of being out of school.
You know, here's the beauty of it. I love that you are like the wise man on the mountaintop, like dispensing wisdom.
Eating my yogurt.
Dropping wisdom like it's hot. Here's the thing. And you know, you and I are simpatico on that
mm-hmm.
philosophy, right?
Yeah.
Even back before the internet, it's like we've had it drilled into our head. This is what you do. This is the path you follow. And then you realize, like, these decisions, it's not like if you make the wrong decision when you're 18, it's going to ruin your life.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you decide to deal heroin or get yourself killed, right? It's like deciding what to do in college or whether to go to college. Whatever, dude. The thing is, with the internet, it's even more true than it was back then.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can learn. You don't have to go to college to learn.
Right.
Right? MIT. So if you go to like, I think it's like MIT.edu, huh. you can find it. MIT puts the entire syllabus, all of the materials, everything for every class
mm-hmm.
online, and it's free. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't go to a class, you don't have the professor to ask questions, and you don't have the professor's assistant, you know, to help you with stuff. You don't have that discipline of that seriousness of the discipline of going to class every day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're motivated and you just want to try, like, hey, I wonder what it would be like to, you know, learn to code whatever the language of the day is, mm-hmm. right? So I could build games. Well, go take a class. It's free.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't go to the classroom, but you can go read through the materials. You can mm-hmm. go week by week. The homework's there. Everything's there. And if you don't like that approach, YouTube
mm-hmm.
or the Khan Academy, Google.
Yeah.
There are a million resources to try to teach yourself some things just to see if you like it.
Right.
And if you love it, yeah, now go sign up for a class at Ivy Tech or wherever to give yourself that seriousness and that other group of people to interact with.
Yeah.
Because I think that's important.
It's very important.
But you don't have to do that. You don't have to start out that way.
Mm-hmm.
You can. That's fine. But just realize, as you said, by the time you're 30, you're going to be doing something you can't even imagine right now. Nobody can.
Well,
things are changing so fast.
It's like my therapist told me. She's like, all these documents on the wall behind me say is that I spent a lot of money and I'm good at passing tests. Mm. She's like, never demean what you've learned on your own. Just because you don't have extra letters after your name doesn't mean you don't know what you're talking about. And the crazy thing is, when you're 14 years old, sometimes 13 years old, you're expected to make a life path at a point in your life when you're struggling to go, am I going to be embarrassed if a girl comes over and my action figures are laying out? That's obscene. That is disgusting.
That reminds me funny. Like, I love making fun of other people's kids. We went to a concert, you know, a choir concert recently. This is like a month ago or something. And, you know, drives me nuts. There's always got to be a song about we are children and we're going to change the world and we just want peace. And like, let's all feel good about these kids, right? During one of those moments, like they had the girls, like each girl comes up, grabs the microphone and says like what her goal in life is, right? And arranged anywhere from, I want to be an inspiration to others, you know, which is, that's cool. These are 13, 14 year old girls, okay? One comes up and is like, I want to be a civil engineer. I'm like, I'm sitting there thinking, you're 13. You sure about that? Civil engineer? You sure you don't want to be like an aeronautical engineer, maybe a chemical engineer? Civil. You've got it figured out. And then I thought that was oddly specific until one comes up and goes, I want to be a cardiothoracic surgeon.
Wow. Like, she wants to work on dinosaurs.
Yeah. I'm like, what's a cardio? A what? Thoracic park. I want to be a cardiothoracic park. I was like, well, how do you, what the? And then it occurred to me, I was like, oh, I know what that is. That's what their parents want them to be.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
yep.
How are you going to be 13 and be like, I want to be a cardiothoracic surgeon? Yeah, you maybe not, you know, gastrointestinal. That's where the money's at.
Right.
Or, I don't know, a brain surgeon?
Yeah.
Or just say surgeon for now, or maybe just doctor?
Yeah.
And then you'll figure it out later? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, we were never, growing up, we were never, my brothers and sisters and I were never really encouraged to do much of anything other than get a job and get out of the house.
Cut wood.
Yeah. Get a job, move out, get married, have kids.
Go outside.
Die. Go outside. That's another one. And now I started having kids. And the one thing I've done about, and I've mentioned this on the show in the past, but I've always taken like, okay, when I started having kids, I went, all right, what did my parents do that I agreed with? What did they do that I didn't agree with? And then cast out the stuff I didn't agree with and bring in some new ideas to see if it jibes with the stuff I agreed with. So then I started having kids, and I started seeing these parents with their kids at an early age being like the overall, you know, the raising their kids to be cardiothoracic surgeons.
Whatever that is.
And what I did was I just, you know, if my kids expressed an interest in something, I showed them where they can go to pursue it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I'm doing okay. You know,
you're doing great.
That's
so here's what I would like to encourage our young listeners and the parents out there. Think about it. It's a mindset. Don't think about it in terms of what do I want to be when I grow up? Think about it in terms of what impact do you want to have on other people in the world when you grow up? So this freaking cardiothoracic surgeon little girl.
Little
I'm sure she's pause. I'm sure
I love
she's
the,
lovely.
I love the pause between little and girl.
This cardiothoracic surgeon little girl. Look, I'm sure she's lovely. I'm sure she has lovely parents. But who cares? Like thinking about what you want to be, right? What impact do you want to have? Do you have this really specific desire to cure people of whatever cardiothoracic surgeons cure people of? my doctor, my cardiothorax has been hurting lately. I'm a cardiothoracic surgeon. I can fix that.
Excuse me. I mean, is there a cardiothoracic surgeon in the house?
Yeah, right. I'm a cardiothoracic surgeon. Sorry.
That won't do. That's just not going to cut it.
I'm the thorax. I speak for the trees. I wish one of them would have got up there and said, I want to be a female doctor. And then maybe one of the boys could have come up and said, I want to be a male nurse. That drives me crazy. I wonder if Paul Volstorf ever tells people, like, so what do you do? I'm a male nurse. It's like, really? A male nurse?
That sounds suspiciously like stripper to me. So I'm a male nurse, and he pulls out. He's got the tearaway pant, you know, scrubs.
Yeah. All right, ladies. I heard somebody has a fever.
I wouldn't put
the male nurse is here.
I wouldn't put take your temperature.
I can see Paul doing that.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him.
All right, we're rambling.
Yes.
Let's unramble this mess. And we could be forgiven since we haven't recorded in a couple weeks.
That's right.
All right. So you got to hear another softcore history. You got to hear a bunch of rambling in the beginning. You got to hear all about Aiden's graduation. You know, where else can you get this much entertainment for this low of a cost? So do go out and check out DontPanicRadioShow.com. Go ahead and share that on your whatever things you share things on.
Various social platforms.
That's right. Maybe email it. Maybe tell someone.
Huh.
And, you know, give us a little love. Give us a like. We don't ask for much. Just love, like, hug.
We're like the lame white single mom that when you go to their house, they have the sign on the wall that says, like, love, like, share.
Exactly. So, you know what? For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson, and nothing. Just heard. Nothing. Just heard. True. Nothing. Just true. Just true.
That's what we keep inside. That's what we keep inside. Just information. That's what we keep inside our heads.